who gets to offer the choice parts of the korbanos. Shar kol hayamim imratzu lahakriv makriv, but any other day of the year,
hello,
the kohen gadol can any time he wants just go up to any kohen and say, tap him on the shoulder and say, excuse me, I'm doing that today. Gadol makriv chelek barosh v'notel chelek. Kohen gadol gets to do everything first when whatever he chooses to do in the best. So we'll continue Mitzvah Hashem with Mishnah Gimel tomorrow. Now let's go right into our Haggadah Shir for the evening. And this is just a reminder, the slot of our regular Monday night 8 o'clock Shir. I recognize some of you, some of the regulars here. And in that Shir this year is called From Gods to God, which is a Shir of how the Tanakh and the ancient Israelites debunked all of the theories of how a nation relates to its deity. And I actually would like to start with that. The hero of the Seder really ought to be a particular person, and yet that person's name is conspicuously mostly absent from the Haggadah. Of course, I'm referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. There is no reference to Moshe except in passing towards the end of Magid. By Hallel, where we say that Vayiru Amas Hashem, Vayaminu Bashem, Uvamoshe Avdo. So in the part of the Haggadah called Hallel, Rech Nirtzach. So it is just willy-nilly reference to Moshe as in passing some kind of comment about refer to Moshe as far as your share. So by doing this, we seem to be putting Kadosh Baruch Hu as the main focus of the Seder. Ani v'lo Malach, Ani v'lo Sorach, Ani v'lo Shliach. I did it all. We're commemorating really the 10th plague more than anything else. Of course, that's the time when we originally ate the Korban Pesach. We had our first Seder during the 10th plague, and that 10th plague was all God. It wasn't anyone else. What was Moshe doing all that night? He was busy with Paro. Paro was to demand that he send Bnei Israel out. And the Stama Moshe had his own Korban Pesach someplace, in his own house, right? But Moshe is conspicuously absent from the Haggadah because he's all God. So that's a segue into this 8 o'clock slot from our regular shir, which is about the gods to God, to our segue into Haggadah. I will tell you this, though, that there is not any ancient religion or any ancient culture that would ever suffer the idea of a god, a deity that enslaves his own people. Right? The Egyptians must have thought on many occasions, what kind of god can they be worshiping? What kind of god makes his own people to be slaves? Well, it's the same question you could ask elsewhere in Tanakh. When God said that Shmuel during the night, if I may ask if anyone is in a place where there's background noise, please mute yourselves so that we all don't hear it. So in when Hashem told everyone muting yourselves if there's background noise, I'm not being asked to do that by a number of people.
Rabbi, in the bottom left of your screen, mute everybody.
No, Rabbi Schwartz, they're fine. You can mute them and they can unmute themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, please mute everybody. It's very hard to hear you.
I just did that. Mute all.
Yeah, I think that when you do that, it mutes people who are connected from a computer, but those who called in, and they're not able to be muted. I mean, they cannot be muted. That's why you still hear noise.
How do I tell them?
People call in to get muted also.
Okay. Go more.
me get back to the point. When God told Shmuel HaNavi that I'm going to destroy Shiloh, he said to him, when the people of the world hear this, what I'm going to do to Shiloh, their ears will tingle. The same thing that Yirmiyahu said in chapter 7 of his book, when he said that God is going to destroy Yerushalayim. In the ancient world, no God does this to his own people. If a temple is destroyed, it's because that God has become weak. It's because that God is no longer able to be strong enough to prevent his temple from being destroyed. He's not strong enough to prevent his people from being enslaved. So what most enslaved peoples did in the ancient world is they stopped worshiping their God. As soon as they were destroyed, most ancient people, when they were destroyed, most ancient people stopped worshiping their God. And most of them started worshiping the God of the nation that destroyed them. Because it's better for me to do so. My God isn't capable of doing anything for me anymore. All of my service, all of my child sacrifices, all that I did for him, didn't make him win this war. You get it? When the Aztecs were being wiped out by the Spanish, they were feverishly slaughtering more and more human beings to their fire god that they thought made them successful for the last 500 years and that will make them successful and turn the tide of this war now, as long as we support for more and more people. The Israelites are the first people in the ancient world that could go along with this. They were the believing descendants of Abraham Avinu, who said that our God told us this would happen. They did not turn away from their God. They may have become assimilated somewhat. They may have turned into the tumah of the Egyptians, but they kept their names, they kept their dress, they kept their language because they expected to be remembered by God. They expected that they would, that God would keep his promise. So that is my explanation, my segue from the regular 8 o'clock cheer to tonight. So I start now with Maggid. If you have a Haggadah, it's the very beginning of the Haggadah of Maggid. It starts with an Aramaic prayer called Holach Ma'anya. The first thing you always want to know in this prayer is, why does it start off in Aramaic and it concludes in Hebrew?
I'll take a picture. So
why does it start off in Aramaic but it ends up in Hebrew? So there are many answers to this. I would just tell you the following. The prayer has an invitation to the poor and an invitation to the people who are in need. That invitation should be made in the language that the masses understand. So that's why we start the Haggadah in Aramaic. The same reason why Kaddish is in Aramaic, and the same reason why Aksuva is in Aramaic, is the same reason why Halach Ma'anya is in Aramaic. It's disingenuous on our part to make an invitation to hungry people in a language they may not understand. But why do we conclude in Hebrew? A very simple halachic reason. And this is a Gemara, it's a Zohar, it's a famous Taisvis in the first parak in Shabbos, first parak in Brachos, that when we make supplications, those supplications should be in Hebrew. Okay, supplications should be in Hebrew. If you stop in the middle of your Shmon Esrei to ask God for things, that should be in Hebrew. Kaddish is not a supplication. Kaddish is a prayer of praise. And that praise has to at some point be said by everybody. Everybody hopefully will one day say Kaddish. So it's a prayer for the masses, and the prayer for the masses needs to be in Aramaic. That, I submit to you, is the simplest pshat of why Halach Ma'anya is in Aramaic. Problem is that almost everything we do here is double. We say kol dichpin yesei b'yechol. Whoever is hungry, come in and eat. Kol ditzrich yesei b'yifsach. Whoever needs, come in and eat the carbon pesach.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is it true that that you're not supposed to say any prayers in English unless you have a minyan in general?
So you're mentioning a halacha that is found in the Shulchan Aruch that if someone wants to craft their own private prayer, they should preferably do so in Hebrew. If that is not an option, because you cannot do so, you're not physically capable of doing so, maybe write it down, get someone to write it for you and read it in the middle of your prayers. But that's what you're saying.
In my shul, we normally say the prayer for the states of Israel and America in English, but when we don't have, I've been saying that in Hebrew for that reason. So is that correct?
Yes, Tosfos discusses your issue that if you have a minyan, you have a natural ear that's listening to a minyan. If you don't have a minyan, then you need to be saying it in Hebrew in order to have the angels help you get there. That's all. That's what Tosfos says. I'll leave it at that. I'm going to move on. So we make a double request. Whoever is hungry, come in and eat. Whoever needs, I don't like to say whoever is needy. Everybody needs to yifsach. Everybody needs to eat the Karban Pesach. I don't think kol gitzrich is a synonym of kol dichpin. Dichpin means hungry. You could be rich and hungry too, by the way. But I would like to suggest that this invitation was said at a specific time on the day before Pesach. I know it opens the Haggadah, and the Haggadah is after Kiddush, and Kiddush is at night. But if we are really being true to this statement of kol ditzrich yesevi yifsach, which means whoever needs, come in and join us in the Korban Pesach, which means this is a very old paragraph. It's one of the oldest paragraphs in the Haggadah, because other paragraphs of the Haggadah indicate that there is no Korban Pesach now, because when those paragraphs were written, the Beis HaMikdash was already destroyed. This Halach Ma'anya is written as if though we are still eating the Korban Pesach, right? By saying Kol Ditzrich Yisei Yifsach. In fact, some Haggadahs omit this line because we don't have the Korban Pesach today. How can we invite someone to eat the Korban Pesach with us, right? Right, like a little later in the Haggadah, we're going to say Lo Amarti Ba'avur Zeh Ela B'Shor Sheyesh. What comes next? Matzah U'Maror Munachim L'Fanacha. We don't say Ela B'Shor Sheyesh Pesach Matzah U'Maror Munachim L'Fanacha. Right, and later towards the end of Magid, when we say Kol Shelo Amar Shlosh Dvarim.
No, I did not.
Lo Yotzo Yedecho Lasso.
I know, but I didn't call them.
Right? We don't point to something that relates to the Korban Pesach. We say Pesach Shayu Ochlim Avoseinu. So I'm going to share with you the Perusha of Yaakov Emden. I have this beautiful Haggadah in my house. It's a Perush with two Perushim in it. Yaakov Emden and Yonas and Abishitz. The two of them were somewhat adversaries in life, but someone managed to print a Haggadah with those two Perushim. They're buried Mamash almost side by side in Altona, and I have a Haggadah with both of those names, both of those commentaries. And in Rav Yaakov Emden's commentary, he points out to this sort of disingenuous invitation. What does it mean to say after Kiddush, which must be at night, Kol Ditzrich Yisevi Yifsach, whoever needs, come in and join us in the Korban Pesach. It's too late to join for the Korban Pesach. You have to be signed up in the afternoon. You have to be registered before the Shechita for the Korban Pesach. So that has to take place much earlier in the day. So if Yaakov Emden suggests that Kol Ditzrich Yisei B'Yifsach was said earlier in the day, and Kol Dichpin Yisei B'Yichol was also said earlier in the day. And that Kol Dichpin is a very famous statement of Yaakov Emden. I think it's been misunderstood as for what he really meant. He said that Kol Dichpin Yisei V'Yichol is for Gentiles, and Kol Ditzrich Yisei V'Yifsach is for Jews. Jews have to eat the Korban Pesach. Remember, this is a very old tefillah at the time that the Korban Pesach is still being eaten. So we're inviting Yidden, if you're Jewish and you don't have a Korban Pesach yet, I'll invite you to join me in mine. And if you're not Jewish, I have something very important today. Because I have all this chametz, and I'd rather give it to you if you're hungry than burn it. It'd be easier for me to just give it to you. So that's called Ichbin Yesevi Yechol for Gentiles, called the Tzrich Yesevi Yifsach for Jews. This parish of Rav Yaakov Emdin, I have to tell you, has been misquoted by many others to allow for Gentiles to be invited to the Seder. I'm sure everyone might have this issue, a co-worker or a neighbor or something today. It's probably not such an issue, but this year. But the issue is not just that there's a lot of wine at the table and there could be a problem of Yayin Nesach. It's not just that there's a problem he could bring chametz into the house in his pocket. The problem is that the Torah says, Ach Asher Yochel Lochem Lochol Nefesh Lochem V'lo L'Goyim, that you're allowed to cook for Jews on Yontif, but you're not allowed to cook for Gentiles on Yontif. All right, I'm not going to get into this issue. If anyone probably does not have this issue today, this year, So another time we'll visit this. But I think that Rav Yaakov Emdin did not mean to say that since Kol Dichbin Yesevi Yechol refers to Gentiles, that this was his tacit permission to invite non-Jews to the Seder on Pesach. And if you do have them, make sure that they leave before benching when you open the door and you ask God to pour his wrath upon them. Okay, so there's three parts to the Halach Ma'anya. One is where we identify sort of the star of the show with the matzah. And remember, there are two names of the holiday. Chag HaPesach starts on the afternoon of Erev Pesach and ends at midnight, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and ends at dawn, according to Rabbi Akiva. And Chag HaMatzos extends for the rest of the holiday. So we have this matzah in front of us. And we recite that this is what our ancestors ate in Egypt. So some of Farshim explain that they actually ate matzah in Egypt, not as they were leaving Egypt, in Egypt. Ibn Ezra in his Perush al Torah points out that if you are poor and you have just a certain amount of bread and you want it to go further, then you want to make it into matzah. It stays in the digestive tract longer than regular bread, as we all know. And now you can get whole wheat matzah, Baruch Hashem. So you want it to go longer, so a poor person is going to make that. It's not just poor bread because it has so few ingredients. It's a poor person's bread. So it really makes perfect sense to avoid eating the bread afterwards, not just because we were in such a rush when we were leaving, but because in the ancient world, yeast and yeast bread, in other words, bread made with yeast that rises, was identified in the ancient world with Egypt. In other words, chametz bread was called like Egypt pita. You know, this is what the Egyptians eat. So if we're supposed to turn our backs on Egypt and turn aside and say this is not, I want to be far away from this, it makes perfect sense to stay away from Egypt by refraining from eating the food so much identified with Egypt. Okay, so this was the another plug of my brother here. This is the value I place on the four different explanations I can give to everything in the Haggadah, is that the Russia, who I call cynical, I can give him all these like sort of scholarly interpretations of things because that's what he wants to hear, and I get away with you can always look up three other perushim if you want. Okay, so that's the we identify the bread. Then we say we do an act of kindness. God, we're serving your creatures. Rachamav al kol ma'asav. I'm not only being kind and bal chesed to Jews who don't have what to eat today. I'm giving my chametz to Gentiles today. So this now reminds us, okay, we're here now. We're in Golus now. Right? So because the rest of this looks like we're praying for the time for when we will be redeemed again. So the Gra and his Haggadah and others say that this prayer, this opening prayer, is a hodgepodge of statements from different time periods, because how can we simultaneously say Kol Gitzrich Yesevi Yifsach, come in and join me in the Korban Pesach, because the Beis Hamikdash still stands, right? And yet say, I hope to be in Jerusalem next year. If you're eating the Korban Pesach, for goodness sakes, you are in Jerusalem. Okay? Parenthetically, maybe this is a good topic for Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, when I can do it in Shul, is what is stopping us from having the Korban Pesach in Israel? This year, probably a virus. But what's stopping us? You know, the Samaritans bring the Korban Pesach. I'm sure you've seen it in the Israeli news every year. But why can't we go up to our bias? Maybe if there are political reasons. But if we could, let's just go up, bring a goat up to bring a lamb up to our bias, and let's eat Korban Pesach. Right? You'd be amazed how many poskim throughout the Middle Ages and even up to our own time have poskim that's exactly what we should do. All right, I'm arguing this because to say Kol Yitzrich Yesevi Yifsach is not necessarily a riot that there's no base to make push. Okay, so here I submit to you the following. That these three parts of Halach Ma'anya is to set the stage for the Seder in the following way, and I have to take you back on the little history lesson. Hashem told Abraham that your descendants will be strangers in a strange land for 400 years. When we actually left, it says we were there for 430 years. And yet, our tradition teaches us that we were only in Egypt for 210 years. And even then, the slavery certainly did not last that long. Yosef was only 39 when we got there. He was 110 when he died. Surely there was no slavery as long as Yosef was alive. So what is the right amount of time here? All right, so you probably know that this was debated. An entire tribe of Ephraim got it wrong. And they left early, and it was very tragic for them. What I'm trying to say is that when God told Abraham it'll be a 400-year exile, there were still questions and doubts over when it's supposed to end. Because you can't tell when something ends unless you can tell when something begins. So I can tell you the same thing in Bais Rishon. When Yirmiyahu predicted the destruction of the temple, he said in chapter 29 that 70 years after this temple is destroyed, it would be rebuilt. 68 years later, Chagai HaNovi turned to Bnei Yisrael and said, why is nothing being done? The 70 years are almost up. And the people said, what are you talking about? The 70 years were up almost 20 years ago. The reason why nothing's being done is because we lost hope. And Chagai had to tell them, you're making a mistake. The same mistake the Gemara in Megillah says that Achashverosh made. You're making a mistake. Yirmiyahu had 2 70-year cheshbonos. One in chapter 25 having to do with the reign of the Babylonian kings, 70 years. Chapter 29 is a separate cheshbon of 70 years having to do with the Chorban Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara says Daniel got it wrong, a number of prophets got it wrong, because if you want to know when 70 years end, you have to know when 70 years began. There were two different beginning dates of two separate 70-year cheshbonos. And Chagai was so successful, he got Yehoshua Kohen Godol, he got Zerubbabel, and he got Zechariah involved, and Ezra and Nehemiah were involved, and they all got involved, and within 2 years, the Beis Hamikdash was up. Imagine that. So, what the point is, though, that an announced 70-year time period was also in doubt. And don't you think that there were some prophets in Sefer Yirmiyahu, like a guy named Hananiah ben Azur, the Gemara started off giving good prophecy, but then he turned to a false prophet. He predicted that there won't be 70 years. It'll be much less than 70 years. There were announced time periods for our redemption, there were still people who had differences and doubts. I'm sure when everyone is reading up on the history of pandemics, 1665 was the Black Plague. You all know what 1665 spawned for the Jews of Europe. His name was Shabtai Tzvi. He announced himself as Mashiach in 1665 at the end of the Black Plague, and he was a terrible disappointment, of course, for the Jewish community. So when things are going bad, everyone is, of course, always talking Mashiach. So when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there's a difference between these two exiles. Is that the exile for Abraham, a time period was given. And still there were doubts. The exile of Yirmiyahu, a time period was given. And still there were doubts. When the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, no prophet told us how long to wait. What does the Gemara tell us in the end of Sanhedrin? Be'ito achishena.
Yeah, I know.
Gemara says that the end will come in speedily in its day. In its day, if we don't deserve it, speedily if we do. That's what Halach Ma'an is, I submit to you. Why the Haggadah begins by acknowledging... Deborah, please mute if you have background noise. Okay, that's why the Halach Ma'anya continues after identifying the bread, after speaking of our time in Egypt. We do acts of kindness. Whoever's hungry, here's what I have for you. Whoever needs, here's what I have for you. And based on this, our kindness, our kind deeds, can make the Kates can say Lashona Haba B'nei Chorin. Okay, so that I close that part of the Haggadah with the prayer that the Kodesh Baruch Hu should look at all of our acts of chesed. There are tremendous and incredible acts, constant acts of chesed, small little deeds of chesed, because a lot of us are trapped indoors, but small little acts of chesed that surely must be noticed on high. And we ask the Kodesh Baruch Hu to make us B'nei Chorin from our self-imposed shibud here in our homes. Okay, from there, the second cup is poured, and the child is especially inquisitive now, because usually after Kiddush, we wash and we start eating. All right, so we washed and we ate some karpas, right? We had some potatoes or some parsley or something else. So now, when do we eat? Let's go eat. And instead, we sing something. Okay, so the kid is probably thinking, okay, we're about to eat. Now you're pouring a second cup of wine? What's with that? The kid can't take it anymore. And he asks, Shana Halayla has any color left. Okay. Now, in Yiddish, this has always been known as the fear kashas, right? The four questions. But I submit to you that they don't look like four questions. They look like four answers. One question. Ma nishtana halayla hazevi kol halelos. How is this night different than all other nights? So the parent tells him, I have four ways of showing you how this night is different than other nights. Right? That's if you read it that the four, that the shebechol halelos is the parent's answer to the child's question. But I don't consider that that's what's happening here. I think that it's all part of the same question. Right? The kid is asking, why is this night? I'm not even sure if mahir means why. I think that the word mahir can possibly mean, how is this night different than all other nights? Like, Marabuma Secha Me'olam Kumachshvo Secha. It's like, Manishtana Halayla Zemikol Elelos. How wonderfully different this night is from all other nights. Right? And this year we'll probably say, why is this Pesach different from all other Pesachs? So the problem is that the kid notices already some activities that denote poverty. The kid already notes that we broke a matzah in two pieces and we put some aside for later, like poor people do. And he also notices, look, my father's wearing this big, nice white garment. I see everyone sitting with pillows. I see everyone washed other people's hands. At our Seder, we don't do anything for ourselves. Everyone pours the next cup for someone else. Everyone washes someone else's hands. Everyone puts the pillow for someone else. We're always doing something for someone else. So when that, not only does it add up as a chuyos, but it means I have someone doing for me. All right, it could be we're doing for each other, right? It could be two people. I do for you, you do for me, but it's still a beautiful point. And the kid notices that it's matzah and maror, the food of impoverishment. And the kid also notices dipping and refining the stuff of chayrus. Okay, so this fits in. I believe I spoke about this last time. It fits in with the matchilim b'gnai u'misayim in b'shevach. That we're supposed to begin with something, the disparaging past that we have, right? And we close with the Shevach, with all the how far we have come. Someone just asked a question, where does it say in the Torah we should ask these questions? So I would say the following. Take out any study, and if you want, there was a study called Bloom's Taxonomy, which was required reading for all teachers about 40 years ago or so. It's called Bloom's Taxonomy of Questions, which instructs teachers how to ask questions on six different levels to enhance very much higher level cognitive thinking than just knowledge and comprehension questions. So the Haggadah, it can be shown, inculcates all of the important educational tools of asking these high-level questions. And these same studies show that the most important time of the learning process is what goes on in a student's mind, or anyone's mind for that matter, when thinking of asking or answering a question, but especially when thinking of asking a question. Okay, so these are the four questions. Mara buma secha, ma tovu alecha, right? Mano roma secha berov. So it's like the child is looking at the night, and hopefully, if we're doing our jobs properly, and it requires some degree of preparation. Okay, so now we move to the answer to these questions. You want to know why this night is so different from all other nights? Okay. The answer is Avodim Hayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim. That's the Gemara asks, how do we fulfill, starting with the disparagement of our people and concluding with the Shevach? So one opinion says start with Avodim Hayinu, go just back to Egypt. Another opinion says Mitzchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah. You have to go even further. Go back to Terach. Go back to the time when we were idolaters, when we were no different than everybody else. And if God had not chosen Abraham, we would have gone the way of every other nation, and we wouldn't be here. So this is where we stand now. Now, I just want to point out that the words in the Torah, Avodim Hayinu L'Farah B'Mitzrayim, V'Yotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham Ben Chazakar V'Rajim Netuya. That's where the pasuk ends. Now, the Haggadah takes over and says, and if God had not done so, we and all of our descendants would still be slaves in Egypt. Now, by the time the Haggadah was written, Egypt was no longer the same nation it was of ancient times. But one can possibly consider that had God not humbled and destroyed Egypt back then, they might have still been a power and we might still be slaves there. Okay? Now, if you look in my Haggadah on page 26, I point out that there's a lot of extra verbiage in this chapter, in this paragraph of Avodim Hayinu. The whole paragraph is filled with extraneous terminologies, and each one of them is coming to stress another point of a basic point, which is as follows: that even if you know the whole story, even if you're a Bucky in Shmos Rabbah and Tanchuma Shmos and Mechilta, and you know all the Gemaras in Sota, and you know every Rashi, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, you know all the Perushim, this is not an intellectual pursuit that we're doing here tonight. If it were, we would be studying Shmos. The pursuit this evening is experiential. It's sensational. It's supposed to sense things, taste and smell. It's experiential. And that, if you look at just again on page 26, all of these extraneous verbiages in this paragraph is meant to point that out, and it continues. Even if right? Mitzvah aleinu lesaper b'tzias Mitzrayim. Remember these two words, lesaper, sipur yetzias Mitzrayim, means to tell a story. I want to change this with a very interesting Canadian word. The Canadian word for telling a story is, get this, shamaru. Shamaru. To tell a story that's meant to stir emotions, to even get you to feel really, that's what happened? You know, you tell a story that has purpose to it, not just to make you feel realistic. So it might, considering that Akkadian is an ancient language very well known to the Israelites, Akkad is one of the nations mentioned in Parshas Noach, and Akkadian was a language they understood, so that when God refers to Leil Shimurim, or Shamor Eschodesh Aviv, so that means it had a double meaning to the Jews. It means that it's a night where God is guarding us, but it also means a night of telling stories. You get it? Shamor Eschodesh Aviv, tell the story of the springtime festival. Okay, and that might also be, by the way, an interesting, using the Akkadian, might be an interesting proof for how we know that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be at night. Right? Most mitzvahs are done during the day. Remember, I think I mentioned this last week, the Vilna Gaon had a very sharp interpretation of Manishtama HaLayla HaZemi Kol HaLaylos. Because nighttime is generally the time of pitur of mitzvahs. We usually don't do mitzvahs at night. If we do a mitzvah at night, it's because of Xeris HaKosav, a special pasuk that says so. But otherwise, tefillin, tzitzis, shofar, lulav, most mitzvahs are done by day to the exclusion of night. So the question, Manishtana halayla hazemi kol halaylos, why is this night different from all other nights? Why are we doing Moror? Why are we doing Matzah? Why are we doing Korb Pesach? Why are we doing Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? What are all these mitzvahs that say, these positive commandments that we're keeping dafka at night? So he says it very sharply. The word Laila looks feminine, right? Laila looks very feminine. Laylos, Laila looks feminine. There's all the rules of femininity, right? Now, he says this because women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. So nighttime is like the feminine time. So Laila, however, is a masculine word. Manishtana halayla should be halayla hazos. No, it's manishtana halayla hazeh. Laila is a masculine terminology. This night behaves like a day. This night is masculine. This the word Laila is masculine. This night behaves like a daytime of mitzvahs. The moon is full, and it's like the sun is shining at night, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was guarding over us and watching over us. Therefore, the Akkadian word kicks in, and we say Leil Shimurim. It's also a night of telling stories. And the pasuk says, "Shamor es chodesh aviv, ki b'chodesh aviv hotziach Hashem Elokecha me'eretz Mitzrayim laila." So the Gemara in Brachas Daf Tes says, "B'chiba laila yotzanim Mitzrayim." Did we leave Egypt at night? Surely we left Egypt during the day. So the Gemara answers in Daf Tes and Maseches Brachas that since Paro gave us permission to leave at night, it's as if though we left at night. The problem with that Perush in Pshat, I'll say it's a good Drash Perush. The problem in Pshat is that the Pasuk refers to God taking us out of Egypt, not Paro letting us out of Egypt. Therefore, I submit to you another Perush that allows for it to refer to when we left, is that Sad Yigaon says that when it says we left Egypt at night, it's referring to the night of the 16th. The night that we're counting the Omer, when we're having the second Seder, that's when we left Egypt. The last Jew filed out of Egypt at night, right? That's when we finally left Egypt. As long as there was some Jews still in Egypt, we were still in Egypt. When did we leave Egypt? When the last one left. It says in Parshas Masse, the Egyptians were burying their firstborn, and we were busy leaving Egypt all day. The last one left at night. So So Kibachodish Habibo, Tiachoshim Lakachem Eretz Mitzrayim, Laila, the night of the 16th. However, the Targum Yonason to the Pasuk says that the word Laila doesn't go on when we left. The word Laila goes on the beginning of the Pasuk. It's like Sirus HaMikra. Shamor is Chodesh Aviv, Laila. Guard this festival at night. So if the word Shamor means tell a story, now I have my answer. That's how we know Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim has to be at night, because it says Shamor is Chodesh Aviv, Laila. Problem is that the Haggadah did not speak Akkadian. So the Haggadah has to find a different source for how we know that the Korban Pesach should be eaten at night, that the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is at night. So that is where it says Yochom Rosh Chodesh. Maybe we should start saying the story from Rosh Chodesh. Talmudomar Bayomahu. So Bayomahu can mean that you have to tell the story during the day. E Bayomahu Yochom Beodyo. If Bayomahu, maybe we should tell the story during the day. Bayom. So Talmudomar Baburzeh. Baburzeh is when we're pointing at things. Lo amarti baburzeh. What am I pointing at when I'm telling the story? Ela b'shar sheyesh. No, notice what comes next. Not Pesach matzah umaror. B'shar sheyesh matzah umaror. Only when I have matzah and maror menachem lefanecha. Okay. All right. So now let's talk about the four sons. And the Torah does not actually call any of these sons by these names. And I must admit that it's very, very harsh to refer to any child as a Rasha. He's a wicked child. Right? What makes us say that this child is wicked compared to the others? What makes him wicked? He's because he said, Maha Avadah Hazos Lachem. Right? So maybe if we compare him to the others, right, if we compare him to the other children who say Ma Eidos Vachukim Mishpatim, right? What are all these statutes? What are all these things you're teaching? So he just calls it Avoda. In the Yerushalmi, it says Ma Tircha Shad Matrichin Osan. What's all this labor? What's all this Tircha that you're giving us, right? So I would tell you that have you ever heard of the story in Maseches Gittin? That when Titus was destroying the temple, and he made his way into the Kodesh Kedoshim, and he took a sword. Remember, hear the story. And he pierced the paroches, right? He pierced the paroches, and what came out of the paroches?
A cry.
Blood from all the sprinklings from all the years from the korbanos. So when blood came out of the paroches, the Gemara says he thought that he killed. Now the Gemara doesn't want to say the words after kill, chas v'shalom. You don't want to say it. So instead, the Gemara uses a euphemism. V'choshav sheharag et atzmo. He thought that he killed himself. Of course, he knew he didn't kill himself. It's a euphemism. It really means to say God. But you don't want to say he thought he killed. Oh, I can't say those words. The Gemara doesn't want to put them together. So it uses a euphemism. In the Talmud, when the Talmud does not want to say the word God for whatever reason, it uses the word atzmo. Now we can see what the Russia is. It says, Vayomer, it says, Kiyomru aleichem b'neichem, ma ha'avodah hazos lachem. What's this work to you? But the Chacham said, Maha Eidos Vachukim Mishpatim Asher Tzivah Hashem Elokeinu Eskem. What are all these statutes that the Lord our God commanded you? Now he does also say you, but at least he mentions God. When the Rasha doesn't mention God, it sounds like, you hear it? Now look at the words at the Haggadah. Ulefi Shehotzi Et Atzmo Min HaKlal. You get it? He took God out of the picture. He doesn't believe that what's in front of him was commanded by God. He believes it's all a joke. Right? So according to this, what is his problem is that he doesn't mention God the way the Chacham does. Now, the Chacham may very well be younger than Bar Mitzvah. So because he mentions the words Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu, he gets a pass for saying his tefillah. Because if he's 12 years old, he can't say Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Osanu. Because I'm not Bar Mitzvah, I haven't been commanded. But if he's 12 years old, then he gets to say Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Eschem. And therefore he's not put up to the calumny and derision that the Russia is for saying Lachem. Get it? Rabbi Lichtenstein said something very, very poignant. He wants to concentrate not on Lachem and not on the Avodah and not on the missing reference to God. He concentrates amazingly on Zos. Hazos. Get this? He says, Ma ha'avodah hazos lochem. What's the pshat? He says an amazing insight. He says that the Russia is sitting there at the Seder table and he says, you know something? By the way, while I'm talking, try to think which biblical character does this sound like. Okay? He's saying, you know something? I agree. The Jewish people should do some things to memorialize and recognize Yetzias Mitzrayim. I agree. We should memorialize the Holocaust. We should memorialize all the things that we experienced. But why? Why with matzah and moror? Who needs this avodah? I agree. We should memorialize our historical events. We should remember our history. Right? But why with the, what? This is too antiquated. Who needs the moror? Who needs the matzah? Who needs this Korb Pesach stuff? Who needs this karpas? Who needs this process? What? That's crazy. Who needs this stuff? I like the idea of a Seder plate, but I want to put my own stuff on the Seder plate. I'm going to put an orange there. I'm going to put, right? Are you familiar with all these newfangled Haggadahs that are out there? Right? Are you familiar with that? These Haggadahs that everybody, you're familiar with these that put in all kinds of new redemptive movements, right? There's a Haggadah for every grievance in the world today. They're going to have a special Haggadah. So, which biblical character does this look like? He says, "I agree with you. We should do these things, but I want the autonomy to do it the way I like." Who talks that way?
Korach,
excellent. Korach, he says, I go along with you. I agree that we should remember the God's majesty by recalling how in us the great expanse of the sky that meets the horizon. So I agree we should remember all the greatness of God's majesty. But why do I have to do it with the blue fringe and the tzitzis? I want to do it on my terms. I want to do it with a blue handkerchief. I want to do it with a blue shirt, a blue tie, a sapphire ring. Right? You get it? Maha avodah hazos lochem. What is this avodah for you? Who said that we should do it this way? I want my autonomy to do it my way. That's why we call this Tether Rosh. Because you know what? If every strange fire that's ever been lit with good intentions, like Nadav and Avihu, perhaps, but it's through a strange fire nonetheless, has always driven Jews away from the basics. If Korach thinks it's a good idea to remember God's majesty, but wants everyone to have their own autonomy to do it their own way, you're looking at chaos. All right? So let's analyze the Rosh's question. It's that he calls it avoda, like tircha. I might say another thing is by the other children it says ki yishocha bincha. By the Russia it's ki yomru aleichem. He's not even asking. Everyone, at least the other kids, are asking questions. Except of course they're showing the Elisha, where we have to ask for him. But the Russia who's ki yomru aleichem. He's not asking. He just wants to cause trouble. Then there is that, so he calls it avoda. Then he says, Maha avoda hazos. I think it should be a different avoda to commemorate. And then lochem, because he doesn't count himself in, he showed see at that small mina klal. He didn't include God in it. It's not just that he didn't include himself in it. He didn't include God in it. Okay? So this is how we move to the four children. I want to close with the way we treat the Sheino Yodei Lishol. In my book, I call him the withdrawn son. I think what's much worse than the one who doesn't know how to ask a question is the one who doesn't care to ask a question. The one who didn't even show up to the Seder. There are more Jews who don't show up to the Seder than who show up. So we have to be careful to bring in those people to make them feel that they want to ask a question. Okay? So in the Seder, it's at Pesachlo. We tell the feminine part of the Seder to open up to this withdrawn person. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this last week, but I want to close this week the way I closed out my Haggadah. The very last page talks about a prophecy of Sefer Yirmiyahu, where he said that the thing that will precede the coming of Mashiach is that God is going to create a new thing in the land. That new thing is that a woman shall encircle a man. Very cryptic prophecy. It's because of this prophecy that women encircle men at weddings. Because Yirmiyahu had said earlier in the book, you will no longer want to get married. Things will be so bad. And then in chapter 31, he said, the weddings will return. Od Yishama Ba'arei Yehuda. Ever wonder why the song begins with the word Od? Od Yishama Ba'arei Yehuda. Once again, people want to get married. And a sign of that redemptive period is the woman shall encircle the man. So every time we perform a wedding, we are basically saying that we're getting one step closer to Yemos HaMashiach. Beautiful. This couple will build a house that will get us closer to Mashiach. So, however, I would like to suggest another interpretation. What Yirmiyahu is saying is that just before the Messianic Age, the women will emerge to be educated. They will emerge to be leaders of the community in teaching. This is something unheard of 100 years ago, 150 years ago. Women were not educated at all. In Jewish studies, of course. So that women would be educated. All movements like this aren't embraced all the time from the start. This needed quite a bit of movement. It needed quite a bit of cajoling, but it took off. And I dare say that the fact that there was Beis Yaakov movement, just when the world needed it after Nebuch, after the Holocaust, where the Jewish community became profoundly withdrawn. And it was because that the women began to be educated that it gave a chance for Torah to take a foothold once again. In 1950, the situation for Jews looked very bleak. It was more than anything, I would like to submit to you, the At Pesachlo, that the withdrawn nature of the Jewish community was given life that was breathed into it by the Nekeva Tosovi of Gavr. So that's what we mean when we tell for the Shinur De Elisho, At Pesachlo. Right? You need to have that. Now, of course, both parents have to be both engaged, and men and women have to be engaged in schools, and we're constantly being teachers in everything we do. So for now, Chevra, be safe. Let's add on to as many Masim Tovim as we can. We'll go invite people who are hungry, invite people who need, and that'll bring us closer to our ultimate Geula. Right? We hear another month that we're call it what you want, whatever you want to call it, quarantine. I'll close with an interesting part of Torah, is that the word quarantine comes from the story of Noach, because Noach had to stay in his ark for 40 days, which has the root quad for four. And when people were in these plagues in the Middle Ages, because Noach was whisked away for 40 days, they thought that to be placed aside from the rest of the people for 40 days was efficacious. So whether or not it's 40, we're going to end up being a little more than 40 days, it seems, going all the way till April 30th. So we're in this for the long run, Chevra. Please, everybody, stay safe. We're going to have, again, Marav every night at 7:45, followed by a Mishnah. And everyone should just have a wonderful night and have a good preparation for Pesach. And I'm available all day if anybody has any questions. So have a great day and a great night, everybody. Kol tov and Chag Sameach.
Thank you. Chag Sameach.
Well, everybody.
Chag Sameach. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Rabbi Schwartz, but please make sure you wear a mask when you go outside.
Okay, I do. I have been. Thank you.
I wish that was the end of it. What can they say already? The hospital, it's rough going, I have to tell you.
Do you have a mask? Avi, do you have a mask?
I do. I do have a mask, but they're really rationing them at this point. And, you know, each day they come out with something new at this point. Even if you're positive for the coronavirus, they expect you to show up if you don't have a fever or temperature or anything else.
That's crazy.
It is, but we're so shorthanded and so overextended at this point.
Which hospital is this?
This is Mount Sinai. It's all coming from Sinai, actually. We're completely overwhelmed at this point, and I think they're getting the philosophy that everyone's going to get it. And you're asking for people who have actually had the disease and have been cured from it, actually,
right.
Plasma. I mean, you've heard of this already. They started treating, you know, the really seriously ill people with plasma antibodies, basically, that, you know, you form. So it's a lot going on, and things just change from day to day. And, you know, they're building a tent, a hospital tent in Central Park at this point, which I'm sure you're aware of.
I saw that, too.
Yeah, so it's... It's really hairy. So I that's why Hashem should, you know,
stay safe.
And
okay, good night, everybody. I'm signing out. Be well.
Good night.
Both of
good night. Take care.